Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
And hello, and welcome to the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. Our audio engineer, Nick, is out today. I think he's on vacation this week. At least he's out of the office. So I'm recording this on Tuesday. I don't know when the episode will be going up. Hopefully today. You never know. Because there's an event happening tonight at Baylor University. Matt Walsh from the Daily Wire is going to be speaking there. And he has caused a bit of a brouhaha. Why, you may ask? Because he's going to talk about Christian values at a Christian university. Now, I didn't get this treatment. I went several years ago to speak about Christian values at Baylor. It was to a smaller audience. I think it was on the pro-life issue. But I recall, no, wait, I remember when I was at Baylor several years ago, I spoke on the pro-life issue. And I do believe there were one or two students that were unhappy that I was there and asked just some probing and aggressive questions during the Q&A, but there wasn't a big maelstrom or protest or anything like that. Ironically, when I sometimes go to quote-unquote Christian or Catholic universities to speak, that's where I find some of my harshest critics. And it amazes me. It's like, if you don't like this teaching, why are you here at this school? Why are you here at a school devoted to Christian values if you absolutely don't agree with them? So I remember when I was in Perth, Australia, I was speaking at a small Catholic university there when I was in Perth several years ago. And there was a young woman who, in the middle of my talk, just interrupted me and started asking questions and making objections. And I said, well, I'm happy to answer your questions at the end of my presentation. And she just kept going on, you can't silence me. You can't tell me what to do. My body, my choice. And I told her, you know what? The university is about a free marketplace of ideas. Nobody's silencing you. If you want to go and reserve a room and hear people come and talk to you, that's your right to do that. And I'm going to do mine, and we'll see whose ideas went out in the marketplace. She said, well, if I rent a room to say my views on why women should have the right to choose, no one's going to come. And I basically said something to the effect, well, that's not my problem. That's not my problem if your awful views about the right to life of unborn children, nobody wants to go and hear about them on a Catholic university. That is what we should expect. And if people do want to go hear about them, they should go here and then graciously offer you a reply. So that's what I wanted to talk about today. But before we get into that, a big thank you to our supporters at TrenthornPodcast.com. We've now cleared the hurdle of 500 patrons. And we are growing. This is allowing us to work on more study series, more bonus episodes, reach more people, and to facilitate our debates and dialogues. And do pray the debates and dialogues come through. I've been reaching out to so many people saying, hey, come on the show. Let's have a conversation. Let's have a debate about this. And either people don't get back to me at all, or they say they're interested and then suddenly ghost me. I find people who say, yeah, I'd love to come on your show. Then I worry they Google me and maybe see more about what I do. And the kinds of engagements that I've had, and then suddenly I don't hear from them anymore, which is sad because I want to have people on. I think I've got one solid one locked in at the end of May and someone else who I might be able to interview here this week or next week. So, which is great because I'm excited about this because on Catholic Answers Live, when I engage people, yesterday I did the show, Why Do You Reject Catholic Morality? And I was having some great conversations with people, but invariably what happens is, you know, these conversations last 7 or 10 minutes. Every 12 to 14 minutes on the show, we have to take a break. We have to take a commercial break. We got soft breaks. The first break and the third break are soft. We can move them, you know, based on our decision. We can make a call whether to move the break or not. We still have to take it. They don't like it if we take the break too late or too early. But we have a hard break on Catholic Answers Live, 27 minutes in and 56 minutes in. You know, we have to take a break halfway through, and we have to take a break when it's the end of the show. And so I always run up against the clock when I'm just getting to a good conversation with people. That's why I'm excited to invite people to come on my podcast, talk with me who disagree with me. And guess what? We're not confined by radio. We can keep talking. Now, I'm not going to bore you to death with hours and hours of droning on about things, but I want to have substantive discussions on these types of issues where you don't feel the pressure of being on radio. Now, I love doing the radio shows because we have these discussions and hundreds of thousands of people are able to hear it and reflect upon it. That's great. But here on the podcast, it offers us a different venue for that. So If you're not supporting, be sure to check out trendhornpodcast.com. Consider making even a small $5 monthly donation. Gives you access to our study series, bonus content, and helps the podcast grow and reach so many people. And everywhere I go to speak, I always have someone comes up to me and says, thank you so much for the podcast. And I say, thank you very much for listening and your prayers, which are the most important things that I need. So let's talk today about Matt Walsh at Baylor University drumming up so much controversy. There's a little video here talking about it at local KCEN-TV, a Texas television station. This is in Baylor, of course, down in South Texas. It's funny about the pro-life thing, by the way, that I had a student who was, you know, kind of protesting. A lot of there are great faculty people at Baylor who are sharp as tacks when it comes to pro-life, when it comes to Christian philosophy. Two of my favorites are Frank Beckwith, who's like a pro-life philosophical mentor to me, and Alex Pruss, who is just an amazing Catholic philosopher who teaches there. So you've got these great resources, you've got this great stuff on campus, and yet the squeaky heretical wheel gets the grease, is what it seems like. So here, let me play the news story and you can see what I'm talking about.
He's off with our talker of the day. An organization at Baylor University has invited a conservative blogger to come speak tonight on campus, and now many are upset about it. They say that blogger is against the LGBTQ community. There have been petitions asking for the university to cancel the speech and also to allow the speaker to come as well.
So we're asking you at home, should the university cancel the speaker? Go to KCENTV.com/vote or use the Channel 6 app to cast your vote. You can leave us your comments on Facebook and Twitter and let us know by joining the conversation this morning. Now here's the story behind our talker. The Baylor Young Americans for Freedom have asked conservative blogger Matt Walsh to speak at the university. Walsh's speech is called The War on Reality, Why the Left Has Set Out to Redefine Life, Gender, and Marriage.
Now, those who want to hear Walsh speak have signed a petition of support, saying this is a matter of free speech and no one is required to come, listen, or even agree with him. However, others have signed an opposition petition saying Walsh's values is harmful and hate-filled towards the LGBTQ community.
Oh, no, the values of the Christian university that he is speaking at, because Baylor is a Baptist university committed to conservative Christian ideals, or I should say to traditional Orthodox Christian ideals, including those related to sexual ethics. And yet somehow, well, here, I'll continue.
Community. A letter has also been written to President Livingstone asking her to stop Walsh from coming to campus, saying Walsh poses a risk to the physical and emotional well-being of students. Walsh has responded to the controversy by way of his YouTube show.
And I love the response here, but I'll play the response, but I completely agree with what Walsh is saying here about people today will whine and scream, and they have no concept of what injury or harm is. That if you have hurt feelings, it's literally a crime against you. You know, you misgender someone by referring to them by their using the correct grammatical pronoun to refer to this person's biological sex is considered something that people want to make that a crime. It is already a crime in certain places like England to do that. It's that just hurting someone's feelings is on par with punching them in the face, apparently. And this is the road to totalitarianism. So here's Walsh's response to the idea that Matt Walsh going to this campus to speak is a threat to people's well-being?
It really is ironic, isn't it, that they've got thousands of people protesting me, using inflammatory rhetoric about me, yet I make them feel unsafe? It is really amazing the ability that some people have to make themselves the victims, even as they're ganging up on one guy and shouting at him, they're the victims, right?
Now, Walsh is expected to speak at 7 tonight as planned in the McClinton Auditorium. So we want to hear from you this morning. Do you think this is a free speech issue? Do you think the university should allow the speech to continue? Or do you think it is harmful for students?
Don't forget to vote on our talker of the day and join our conversation by leaving us your comments. It looks like 88% say no, it's free speech. 89% now moving poll. And I think that's been the majority all morning long.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, one thing I want to just take away from this. This is not a free speech issue per se. Baylor University is a private university. They can decide who speaks on campus and who doesn't. So that's why when I get invited to Catholic universities, to private universities, I always have some trepidation because they could pull the plug 5 seconds before I go up there to speak, and I would have no recourse whatsoever because a private university gets to decide that. Now, that's actually a good thing because let's say you're a private Catholic or Christian university and you want to promote your religious values, you may say, guess what? If you're a speaker, you don't align with our values, you don't get to speak on campus. That's the beauty. If it's private, you should take advantage of that. So if they were to cancel Matt Walsh, it's not free speech. They'd have the right to do that. I don't think that's the problem. They, as a private university, should not be beholden to have any speaker on campus whatsoever. The problem would be if Baylor said Matt Walsh can't speak, is that they would be repudiating and betraying the very values that they stand up for. Now, they could say, they could argue that it's not the values, they don't, you know, even a Christian speaker who shares their values, they may say, we don't like this person's abrasiveness, their mean-spiritedness, we don't like, you know, these, and I'm not saying Matt Walsh is abrasive or mean-spirited. He's definitely bolder than I would be in what he says. And I appreciate that. And I don't agree with every single thing that Matt Walsh writes. I mean, there's hardly anybody out there. I don't think there's anybody out there. I agree with every single thing that they write or view that they hold. And so there's certain issues I'm going to have disagreements with Matt Walsh on, usually more minor. But then there's different ways of tone and attitude we would approach an issue that I might approach a little differently than he would. So the best case the university can make is it's not his content, it's just his style, personality. You know, this is the problem that we have. But at the end of the day, Matt Walsh is not some kind of raging hate monger. He's a rational individual who's putting forward solid arguments to defend traditional Christian orthodoxy. And so that's something I wholeheartedly agree with. And he should go to Baylor to talk about how the left is radically redefining marriage, human sexuality, in a way that is contrary to Christian values and contrary to human reason, quite frankly. So if Baylor were to say, no, we don't want Matt Walsh coming, the only leg they would have to stand on, because Matt Walsh is not some kind of crazy hate-mongering lunatic, would be that it's his views saying that sexual activity is only appropriate within marriage between a man and a woman. That's the thing that's offending people. The reason people are protesting him, when you read the letter, there's a letter here on Google Docs. Although I think they may have amended it a little bit. This is the one they want us to send out in protest of Matt Walsh. I want to go through it with you because this is the crossroads here. And I believe this is important. For me, the issue of quote-unquote LGBTQ, this is a very important issue for us to discuss. People will say, why are you so focused on this? You know, you're homophobic because you're only focused on this issue. Well, I'm not only focused on it, but I do believe it's a wedge that when you start here and you change the gospel, you change the deposit of faith to satisfy people's feelings about this particular sexual behavior, where will it end? You'll change your teachings on hell. You'll change your teachings on the Eucharist. You'll change your teachings on salvation. And you will change the faith so that it accords with your personal feelings and what you want reality to be, rather than the way reality is how God created it. And coming to terms with that and recognizing that we are sinners, we need God's grace, we need Him, He doesn't need us. So I want to go through a little bit of this letter, although it's funny how it starts. Here's how it begins. We are not protesting Matt Walsh coming to Baylor University. So I guess they're already getting flack at the idea that people don't like the idea of a speaker being shouted down. So they're saying, we're not protesting that. We are using his invitation to speak as an opportunity to achieve long overdue change to the university's exclusion of LGBTQ student groups. Read this letter and sign to support. So what the letter is now saying, you know, this letter was referred to in the newscast I just shared with you, that they're not trying to use this letter to say, hey, we want Matt Walsh shut down. That doesn't appear to be what they're saying. What they're saying is if Matt Walsh can come and speak and Young Americans for Freedom can have their group on campus, why can't we have an LGBTQ plus, QQISAI2SB? It never ends. Why can't we have our group, our LGBT group, and our LGBT speakers come to campus? And so they're trying to say this is unfair, and they do so in a very poorly argued way. So we have learned Baylor University has approved the student group Baylor Young Americans for Freedom as an official student group on campus. As an official student group, Baylor YAF is permitted to apply to host events, speak in Baylor facilities and auditoriums. They go on to say you invited Matt Walsh, who's giving a talk, The War on Reality, Why the Left has Set Out to Redefine Life, Gender, and Marriage. They go on to say, what's wrong with this? The flyers for this event, which were also approved by the university's Department of Student Activities, contain images that many find inflammatory, associating the LGBTQ community with totalitarian regimes. well, a lot of you guys want socialism, and you know, socialism was the main economic policy of totalitarian regimes like the USSR, the Soviet Union, United Soviet Socialist Republic. So I don't see the. I'd have to see the flyer itself to see what the problem is, but I'm sure they're just they don't like the idea of tying liberal economic and social policies together. So here's the case against Walsh, where they say in the letter, Mr. Walsh is openly critical of LGBTQ people. Okay, try a citation here. I'm sure he's critical of people who identify this way, who contradict the truth, but not the people themselves, or at least of you know there are things maybe they've done that are that he's critical of. He also opposes women ministers. Well, you should probably take that one up with God, because God has given us, you know, Jesus chose 12 male apostles, not because he was culturally conditioned in first century Palestine to only choose men, but he chose men to be the leaders of the church. When he became incarnate, he truly became man. So if that's the problem, that's not just Walsh's opinion, that's 2,000 years of Christian orthodoxy. So he opposes women ministers and the hashtag MeToo movement and believes that higher education in the United States is, quote, overrun by feminists and nihilists. I love how this is supposed to be. He can't speak because he's against MeToo. And he says that higher education's got feminists in it. Well, you know, that's just the fact of the matter, ladies and gentlemen. It's like for me, I sit here and say, well, what's the problem? You don't like that he's pointing out there are many feminists in academia who have overrun departments with nonsense. Like I said on the podcast a year or two ago, there was a study in climatology journal, a study of glaciology, a study of glaciers, saying we need more feminist approaches to the study of glaciers. That's a real peer-reviewed journal article that's been published out there saying that. I'm going to look it up right now to give you the title, because this is a real thing. Here it is. M. Carey, 2016, Glaciers, Gender, and Science, a Feminist Glaciology. That was in a real, quote-unquote, peer-reviewed journal. So it's like, he's right. He has goes on to say, I'll read the one before this. Mr. Walsh believes that men were put on the earth to have authority over women, and that women should never be in a position of authority over men. They don't put a quote in here. Instead, they quote from an article Walsh wrote on The Blaze, where he talks about how priests are supposed to be men. God chose, and he's defending the male priesthood. And that is something that is a traditional Christian view, and he puts forward biblical arguments for that. And he talks about how the domestic church at home mirrors the church that Christ founded. And so he's talking about what Scripture says, how St. Paul writes, the head of every man is Christ, the head of a wife is her husband, and the head of Christ is God. And so Walsh says, to put the woman at the head of a man is to subvert the order established by God, manifested by Christ, explained by Paul, affirmed by the church fathers, and basically adopted by all of Christianity up until a few decades ago. And then let's see here. Does this mean that women are unimportant or incidental to the life of the church? This is Walsh's article they're quoting. Not in the slightest. After all, Christ came to earth through the body of a woman. He performed his first miracle at the behest of a woman. It was a woman who came and wiped the blood and sweat from Christ's brow as he carried his cross up Calvary. Even as, scroll down here, women are the ones who first learned of the resurrection. There are many examples just like this in Scripture. Women played an integral and indispensable part in biblical times, in the early church, in the modern church, and of course, in the domestic church. Women have a crucial and utterly necessary role to play in the church and the family. What they don't have is the same role. And so goes on from there. So the protest goes on to say, he has stated that women are very often raunchy, aggressive, and sexually assertive. Well, that's part of that. That's part of third wave feminism. In fact, third wave feminism. So the first wave feminism was we want the right to vote. Second wave feminism is we want the right to work. Third wave feminism is I want the right to sleep around with whoever I want to, and have an abortion, whatever. In fact, third wave feminists call themselves raunch feminists. They call themselves raunch feminists. So for him to say women are very often raunchy, aggressive, and sexually assertive, that's just a reflection of how third wave feminists describe themselves. And he believes that women athletes have literally dozens of immutable biological disadvantages in comparison to men. I just love that it's just so matter of fact here. Like, look at how evil this speaker is that YIF brought in. This speaker says that women, says he has the audacity to say women have disadvantages to men in athletics. Why do you think we have separate men and women's leagues? The whole point of Title IX, federal Title IX discrimination in athletics, is to say that you have separate male and female athletics. Because if it was all put together, if men and women were always on the same team, women for almost every sport, except for maybe ultramarathon swimming and a few other sports women tend to excel at. But for most other sports that require brute strength and speed and where having 30 nanomoles of testosterone per liter of blood in your system, whereas, as I said in the podcast with Marie and Christine, women have maybe, you know, 1 nanomole per liter. Now, 30 is pretty high even for a man. That's a very, very manly man. But on average, you know, let's say a man will have 15 points of testosterone per liter of blood. Women might have 1. So because of this in sports, men are going to have an advantage. Most of the world records are held by men. That's just a fact. And that's the whole point of his talk. This is so appropriate for Walsh to speak on his talk, the war on reality, that you don't want to accept. Men and women are equal. There's no differences between men and women. Well, what about we look at these athletic records that most of them are held by men? That's because of patriarchy, because women don't have access to the same high-tech training facilities as men. Men and women are different. You're just going to have to. It's just almost comical how people behave, that just reality itself. You should point out that reality itself has become offensive to these people. So they go on to say that, you know, this has, you know, made people upset. Some of the undersigned have expressed concerns about the risks Mr. Walsh's presence on campus poses for students' emotional, psychological, and physical well-being. How? Because he's speaking the truth about reality? And what they'll say is that if you're critical in any way, shape, or form, if you're critical of LGBT behavior or ideology, you put people at risk of killing themselves. And it's your fault. It's your fault. If you are critical in any way, if you say sexual behavior, when used improperly, is disordered, if you refer to sexual disorders, people are going to kill themselves, and it's your fault. No, and no one's willing to accept, though, well, wait, maybe the reason that people who identify as LGBTQ have higher rates of mental illness or are more likely to commit suicide is because that is a side effect of having a disordered sexual behavior or, disordered orientation or a disordered sexual identity. That when you have this injury to your own personal psyche, it will manifest in forms of mental illness or even in suicidal ideation. No one will consider that because when you go to other countries, you go to the Netherlands, you go to other countries that are quote unquote gay friendly, people who identify as LGBTQ still have higher levels of mental illness and higher suicide rates. And then the retort is, well, even in those countries, there's still stigma. But here's the thing. Your claim now that criticism of LGBTQ labels or behaviors causes mental illness and suicides, that's the driving factor. It's become, if you phrase it that way and you have an explanation for any other data that contradicts it, you've created an unfalsifiable religious view, essentially. It's unfalsifiable. How can you say, well, this is my hypothesis, that when people criticize LGBTQ theories of identity or behavior, they cause mental illness, they cause suicides. And any other place in the world, there's always this stigma that causes it. How would you disprove that? Because you're never going to be able to create a control situation where the stigma is gone to see, well, wait a minute, what if it's just the identities themselves? What if it's the behaviors themselves that lead to these negative effects to a person's spiritual, emotional, and physical well-being? That's never addressed. So they go on to say, our understanding is the university continues to deny applications for student organizations that would serve as a community for LGBTQ students. And say this goes beyond logistics, excluding and stigmatizing people based on their LGBTQ identity, enhances risk of violence, depression, substance abuse, yada, yada. But here's what's hard also. What they want is not just a place for people who identify as LGBTQ to be able to meet and talk with one another. I was asked this when I was at the University of San Diego and gave a talk there. One of the questions in my talk was, do you have any friends who identify as LGBTQ? You know, do you have any? And so it's this idea here. It's like one of those gotcha questions. Like, well, if you don't have any friends who identify this way, you're clearly a homophobic bigot. You know, it's one of those gotcha questions. And my retort to them, my reply is say, well, what do you mean by that? First of all, I'm busy at home with two kids. I've hardly got any friends at all as it is. I know that sounds sad, right? I'm busy at home with my kids. Now, I have a few friends I go and hang out with. You know, the amount of friends I hang out with, I can probably count on, you know, one or two hands. And my life is not an after-school special. I don't make sure that the 10 friends that I have are perfectly divided among diversity so that when we get together, there's somebody who's African-American, someone who's Hispanic, someone who's Asian, someone who's in a wheelchair. And, you know, it's not like we get together. We're not Captain Planet and the Planeteers or just, you know, the racially diverse people of an after-school special. My friends are people that friends are people who share your same core values. So my friends are people who share my same Catholic values. Now, I'm friendly to people who don't share those values, people who are Protestant, who are Jewish or atheist. I'm friendly with those people. I'm friends from high school who support LGBTQ identities. I'm friendly with them, but they're not my close friends because we don't have the same core values to build one another up with. Now, I do have acquaintances who identify as, they identify as having same-sex attractions, but they choose to be chaste and they don't act upon those attractions. So my question is, and I remember I said this at USD, I said, so I have a friend who, an acquaintance who I speak with, who's helped me with my works, who he doesn't call himself gay, but he identifies that he has same-sex attraction. Would that count for you that he's an LGBT friend or acquaintance? And I saw a girl shaking her head. No, in the audience. Because it's not just the attractions, it's LGBTQ is a political label saying that you believe this behavior is not even just morally neutral, it's good, it's celebratory, it's praiseworthy. It almost becomes an idol for some people. So no, I'm not going to have friends who essentially have idols in their life that take away their focus from our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And so what they're asking for here is not just a place for people who struggle with same-sex attraction. They want to have essentially a gay student union, LGBT union, like at many public universities, that advocates for this political cause that runs contrary to Baylor's core values. And so, let me just talk about, here's where they gets to the meat of the matter. The university has at times referred to its statement on human sexuality to justify its decision to decline official status to groups that offer a voice and community to LGBTQ students and allies. The statement provides that, quote, "It is expected that Baylor students will not participate in advocacy groups which promote understandings of sexuality that are contrary to biblical teaching." Well, I mean, that's your silver bullet right there to say the reason you guys can't have your LGBTQ group on campus is the same reason we don't have an atheist group on campus. It's the same reason we don't have a Satanist group on campus. We can't have groups on campus that are actively opposed to biblical teaching. Now, you could have a Democrat club, a Republican club that, you know, I would say, though, at least for the either club, if either of those clubs is endorsing some kind of intrinsic evil like abortion or racism, then that would be contrary to biblical teaching. But if you could have different even political groups where Christians can disagree on prudential judgments. You know, the Bible has not settled for us what particular tax brackets we could have. It hasn't answered the question on the minimum wage. It doesn't answer many of these prudential judgments. So you can have differing student groups who have, you know, differing political views. But when it comes to cut and clear biblical teaching, you can't have a group that opposes these things. So they respond to that and say, "We believe reliance on this statement is misplaced. As an initial matter, the statement contains viewpoints that are hotly contested within Christian and Baptist theological circles." And so then it cuts down to, there's a ton of references in this Google Doc, you know, to try to make it seem more impressive than it is. And so it says, well, who's contesting this? And says, footnote 39, see, for example, David Gushy, Changing Our Mind. Or David Gushing, "I'm an evangelical minister, and I now support the LGBT community." So they go to David Gushy, who was a prominent evangelical ethicist, and now, surprise, surprise, he's left evangelicalism. He's a Protestant. He's left what it would be considered evangelical Protestantism to have more liberal, mainstream Protestantism. I won't be surprised, honestly, if he's out of Christianity in general in the next 3 to 5 years. And we've seen that. I mean, it's so funny. It's the same with Michael Corrin, who's, he was a Catholic broadcaster up in Canada. And he wrote, it's a sad case with Corrin. He wrote a book called Why Catholics Are Right. And then I think he found out that his son identifies as being gay. And now I think he's left the church over his teaching on homosexuality. So much for that book, Why Catholics Are Right. It goes back to the gospel. Remember when Jesus said, no one, and it really comes across even clearer in the gospel account when it's recorded where Jesus says, no man can come to me unless you hate father and mother, brother and sister, you cannot be my disciple. Jesus said that. Now, that's harsh. He doesn't mean literal hate. That's a Hebrew Semitism. It means to love less. So you go back to Genesis 30, and Leah is described as the wife that Jacob hated. He didn't hate Leah. He just loved her less than Rachel. And so I believe it's Luke, when he records Jesus saying this to a Gentile audience, helps people understand the meaning. Matthew talks about unless you hate father or mother. He's writing to a Hebrew audience who gets the Semitism. Luke records it as Jesus saying, whoever loves mother or father, brother or sister, son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. St. Thomas Aquinas defines sin as loving creation, the creature, more than the creator. And so we see this in people who they have an attraction or a love, even for family members or friends. And that is the most important person to me in my life. That even takes the place of my relationship with God. And when we have that viewpoint of putting a person or a thing in this world above God, it will lead to ruin. Read The Great Divorce by C.S. Lewis. It describes heaven and hell. And in hell, there's a woman there who refuses to go to heaven because she can't leave her son who's rejected God. She loves creature more than creator. We should pray that we do not do that. And I pray that you guys will have another great week. Thank you all for being with me. Pray that the students of Baylor will have open hearts and minds to the Bible's teaching on sexuality. Thank you guys once again, and I hope you all have a very blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.